How to conduct meetings. I recently received a letter from a brother I highly respect, making inquiries in regard to meetings, how they should be conducted. He inquires if there should be many prayers offered in succession, and then a relief of a few moments, and quite a number of prayers again. From the light I have had upon the subject, I have decided that God does not require us, as we assemble for His worship, to make these seasons tedious and wearisome, by being obliged to remain bowed quite a length of time, listening to several lengthy prayers. Those in feeble health cannot endure this taxation without extreme weariness and exhaustion. The body is weary by remaining bowed down so long. And that which is worse still, the mind becomes so wearied by the continuous exercise of prayer that no spiritual refreshment is realized, and the meeting to them is worse than a loss. They have become wearied mentally and physically, and they have obtained no spiritual strength. Meetings for conference and prayer should not be made tedious. All should, if possible, be prompt to the hour appointed, and if there are dilatory ones, who are half an hour or 15 minutes even behind the time, there should be no waiting. If there are but two present, they can claim the promise. The meeting should open at the appointed hour, if possible, be there few or many present. Formality and cold stiffness should be laid aside, and all be prompt to duty. There should not be, upon any common occasion, prayer of more than 10 minutes' duration. If any feel the burden of prayer, after there has been a change of position, and the exercise of singing or exhortation has relieved the sameness, then let them pray. All should feel it a Christian duty to pray short. Tell the Lord just what you want without going all over the world. In private prayer, all have the privilege of praying as long as they desire and of being as explicit as they please. They can pray for all their relatives and friends. The closet is the place to tell all their private difficulties and trials and temptations. A common meeting to worship God is not the place to open the privacies of the heart. What is the object of assembling together? Is it to inform God, or to instruct Him by telling Him all we know in prayer? We meet together to edify one another by a mutual interchange of thoughts and feelings, thus making one another acquainted with our aspirations, our hopes, and gathering strength and light and courage from one another. By our earnest, heartfelt prayers, offered up in faith, we receive refreshment and vigor from the source of our strength. These meetings should be most precious seasons and made interesting to all who have any relish for religious things. There are some who, I fear, do not take their troubles to God in private prayer, but reserve them for the prayer meeting, and then do up their praying for several days in these meetings. Such may be named social conference and prayer meeting killers. Their cold, frozen prayers and lengthy, backslidden testimonies cast a shadow. They emit no light. They edify no one. All are glad when they get through, and it is almost impossible to throw off the chill and darkness their prayers and exhortations have brought into the meetings. From the light which I have received, our meetings should be spiritual and social, and not too long. Reserve, pride, vanity, and fear of man should be left at home. Little differences and prejudices should not be taken with us to these meetings. Like a united family, simplicity, meekness, mutual confidence, and love should exist in the hearts of brethren and sisters who meet to be refreshed and invigorated by bringing their lights together. "Ye are the light of the world," says the heavenly teacher. All have not the same experience and the same exercises in their religious life. But those of diverse experiences come together and with simplicity and humbleness of mind talk out their experience. All should have and will have an experience that is living, that is new and interesting, if they are pursuing the onward Christian course. A living experience is made up of daily trials, conflicts and temptations, strong efforts and victories, and great peace and joy gained through Jesus. A simple relation of such experiences give light, strength, and knowledge that will aid others in their advancement in the divine life. The worship of God should be both interesting and instructive to those who have any love for divine and heavenly things. Jesus, the heavenly teacher, when he was upon the earth among the children of men, did not hold himself aloof from them, but in order to benefit them, he came from heaven to earth where they were, that the purity and holiness of his life might shine upon the pathway of all and light the way to heaven. The Redeemer of the world sought to make his lessons of instruction plain and simple, that all might comprehend them. He generally chose the open air for his discourses. There were no walls which could enclose the multitude which followed him. But he had special reasons for choosing the groves and the seaside to give his lessons of instruction. For he could have a commanding view of the landscape and scenery, and make use of objects and scenes with which those in humble life were familiar, to illustrate the important truths he made known to them. The works of God in nature he associated with his lessons of instruction. He made use of the birds, which were caroling forth their songs without a care, and the flowers of the valley glowing in their beauty, and the lily that reposed in its purity upon the bosom of the lake, the lofty trees, the cultivated lands, the waving grains, the barren soil, the tree that bore no fruit, the everlasting hills, the bubbling stream, the setting sun, tinting and gilding the heavens, to impress his hearers with divine truth. He connected the works of God's finger in the heavens and upon the earth with the words of life he wished to impress upon their minds, that as they should look upon the wonderful works of God in nature, his lessons would be fresh in their memories. Christ, in all his efforts, sought to make his teachings interesting. He knew that a tired, hungry throng could not receive spiritual benefit, and he did not forget their bodily needs. He wrought a miracle to feed 5,000 who had gathered together to listen to the words of life which fell from his lips. Jesus regarded his surroundings when giving his precious truth to the multitude. The scenery was such as would attract the eye and awake admiration in the breasts of the lovers of the beautiful. He could extol the wisdom of God in his creative works and could bind up his sacred lessons by directing their minds through nature up to nature's God. The landscape, the trees, the birds, the flowers of the valley, the hills, the lake, and the beautiful heavens were associated in their minds with sacred truths, which would make them hallowed in memory, as they should look upon them after Christ's ascension to heaven. When Christ taught the people, he did not devote the time to prayer. He did not enforce upon them, as did the Pharisees, long, tedious ceremonies and lengthy prayers. He taught his disciples how to pray. "And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily, I say unto you, they have their reward. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father, which seeth in secret, shall reward thee openly. But when ye pray, use not vain repetition, as the heathen do, for they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. Be not ye therefore like unto them, for your Father knoweth what things ye have need of before ye ask him. After this manner, therefore, pray ye." Christ impressed upon his disciples the idea that their prayers should be short, expressing just what they wanted and no more. He gives the length and substance of their prayers, expressing their desires for temporal and spiritual blessings and gratitude for the same. This sample prayer, how comprehensive! It covers the actual need of all. 1 or 2 minutes is long enough for any ordinary prayer. There may be instances where prayer, in a special manner, is indicted by the Spirit of God, and where supplication is made in the Spirit. The yearning soul becomes agonized and groans after God. The Spirit wrestles as did Jacob, and will not be at rest without special manifestations of the power of God. This is as God would have it. But there are many prayers offered in a dry, sermonizing manner. These pray to men, not to God. If they were praying to God and really understood what they were doing, they would be alarmed at their audacity. For they delivered a discourse to the Lord in the mode of prayer, as though the Creator of the universe needed special information upon general questions in relation to the things that were transpiring in the world. All such prayers are as sounding brass and tinkling cymbal. They are made no account of in heaven. Angels of God are wearied with them, as well as mortals who are compelled to listen to them. Jesus was often found in prayer. He resorted to the lonely groves or to the mountains to make his requests known to his Father. When the business and cares of the day were ended and the weary were seeking rest, Jesus devoted the time to prayer. We would not discourage prayer, for there is far too little praying and watching thereunto, and there is still less praying with the Spirit and the understanding also. Fervent and effectual prayer is always in place and will never weary. Such prayer interests and refreshes all who have a love for devotion. Secret prayer is neglected, and this is the reason why many offer such long, tedious, backslidden prayers when assembled to worship God. They go over in their prayers a week of neglected duties and pray round and round, hoping to make up for their neglect and pacify their condemned consciences, which are scourging them. They hope to pray themselves into the favor of God, but frequently these prayers result in bringing other minds down to their own low level in spiritual darkness. If Christians would take home the teachings of Christ in regard to watching and praying, they would become more intelligent in their worship of God.